Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
And I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. So I always throw a fantastic out and try to segue it in. I got one that's not, we'll figure out how we land.
Okay.
So I heard today that they are now making those goldfish crackers. You remember those little crackers
a kid? Of course.
That are larger by 50%, specifically made for adults. Now, when you think, like, I want a good snack, do you think of, man, those goldfish crackers taste good? I don't ever think, like, even as a kid, I don't think I was like, man, these taste good. I think these are just like, here's a snack.
Okay, so as a fine connoisseur of snacking, here's what I find.
Sure.
That if my kids are eating goldfish,
uh-huh,
I'm going to eat some goldfish.
Sure, okay.
I'm grabbing a handful of goldfish.
Of whatever snack it is.
Yeah.
Do you do the same thing with, like, bag, if they eat, I don't know if you're the ones that did the cereal, like the Cheerios or bags of Lucky Charms. You ever see parents that
pretty
do that
much.
Stuff? Are you just going in for whatever snack it is?
I mean, obviously.
Within reason.
I've never really turned down a snack. but what I'm saying is I'm not turning down goldfish.
Okay.
I don't know if I would just go buy them because if I was to go buy the goldfish.
I think they're called like mega size or something like that.
They would be on the same aisle as Cheez-Its. They would be right next to Cheez-Its.
Oh, yeah, and I'm picking Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its are winning.
I'm winning.
You know?
That's true.
And maybe even, you remember Cheez Nips?
Yes, Cheez
Nips. I think I would take Cheez Nips over goldfish, although they're
horrible
essentially
nickname.
The same thing. I've never even thought about it in that context.
No,
but yes, you're absolutely right.
Cheez- well, dude, we are not talking about goldfish.
You
or
don't
cheese
want
nips.
That nickname. No, I'm not moving on from Cheez Nips.
We are going to be excellent to each other.
All right, okay.
And we're going to party on, dudes, because we are in movie month. We're knee deep in movie month.
Yes, we are.
And we are covering Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the Kiss version, God Gave Rock and Roll to You. Number two. Here we go. Play a little of it, Rob. Let's rock out.
What a grand intro.
Oh, man. Take your time.
Man. Out.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
All right, guys, I'm going to bring us back out of that because I'll just give you a little caveat on how we got into picking this song. So, first of all, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, killer song.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have the songwriter of the original version. We have Russ Ballard from Argent on.
That's right.
So stick around. You're going to love the interview with the songwriter, and we're going to talk about the Argent version. But Rob has been wanting to cover a Kiss song for a while.
Yes.
And I have debated doing maybe as a rivalry episode, but man, do we both love this song.
Yes.
And we thought, what better way to tie it in than to throw it into movie month and talk about some Bill and Ted's love.
Come on.
I'm wearing a Bill and Ted shirt.
Yes.
Compliments of
Jack.
Man, thank you so much. I'm rocking it. It's from the San Dimas High School.
That's right.
Rival high school of my wife from California out there. So great shirt.
Yes.
Great.
Jack sent us 4 t-shirts, I think,
so
right?
Kind.
He sent me some in like big dude size, and then he sent you a couple Wild Stallions related.
Normals. I've got one that says, I think it says Party On Dudes or Be Excellent to
Each Other.
Something. It's so good. Oh, no, I got the other one says San Dimas High School Football Rules.
That's the one.
Yeah,
so, which is awesome.
Oh, so good. So good.
Huge Bill and Ted's fan. I rewatched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey in preparation for this episode, just because this song actually plays over the end credits, mm-hmm. but the plot of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey involves a battle of the bands. That's the central theme, is they have to play at this battle of the bands in order to further their quest to become the band that is going to bring about peace in the world. And they, of course, go through a bogus journey in the process,
yes.
in which they die and go to hell and then to heaven.
Play games against death.
They beat death. And he joins the band. And anyway, I don't want to spoil anything, but if you haven't seen Bogus Journey by now,
I have not seen the newest one.
Oh, it's so good. Face the Music. Yes.
Yeah, I need to watch it. I think it's where you can watch it cheaper, but when it originally came out, it was like $39.99 or something.
Oh, yeah. When you got premium, yeah.
It's premium stuff. And I was like, I like Bill and Ted, but,
but not that much. No, it's
food.
Really very good. Yeah. It's a,
also
it's
love
a great.
Goldfish.
I don't like, I'm not a big fan of like sequels for sequel's sake. You know what I mean? But I know they worked on that one for a long time, and it's actually a worthy sequel. It's very good.
So I do need to watch it. But yeah, talk a little bit about the song. We'll jump right into this thing.
Okay, so this version is actually called God Gave Rock and Roll to You 2, by Kiss, because Kiss made some significant lyrical changes. And so this version from 1991's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and the 1992 Kiss album Revenge, the original version is by Russ Ballard only. Recorded by Argent. Written by Russ Ballard.
Correct.
The Kiss version is credited as Russ Ballard, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, and Bob Ezrin, who was Kiss's producer for the Revenge album. So because they changed lyrics, added lyrics to a significant degree, so they actually got songwriting credit for this version. The Kiss version went to number 21 on the Billboard U.S. Mainstream Rock chart. It went to number 4 in the U.K. This was a top 5 hit in the U.K. and Switzerland, number 5 in Ireland, number 9 in Germany, top 20, several other places. So it was actually a pretty significant single for them at the time, especially when, at this point, Kiss was not the biggest band in the world anymore. This was on their way back toward a swing up in the, like, Psycho Circus era when they reunited with the original lineup. But, this was while they were sans makeup, shall we say, in the makeup era.
Painted faceless.
Yeah.
Well, they had faces, but no.
Right. Yes.
I said that wrong. Faceless, paintless faced.
There you go.
I was putting the less in the wrong.
Anyway.
Paintless faced Kiss. There you go. Without Ace Frehley? Without Chris,
that's right. So we'll talk about some of the other members because they are significant to the story behind them doing the song. But I just want to say, genuinely, truly, I love everything about this song.
Okay.
And I am not the world's largest Kiss fan. I don't own any Kiss records.
Okay.
I love a couple of Kiss songs. I love this song. I love Rock and Roll All Night. There's some others that I rock with, you know what I mean? That I'm like, whatever, you know, I'll turn it up, fine. But I'm not like, you know, Kiss, you know what I mean? However, this song just, I get this song, dude. I love everything about it. The melody, the feel, the gang vocals,
the gang vocals,
for days. And you know what? I love the idea of this song. Rock and roll is a beautiful thing, and to acknowledge that something beautiful came from God is right up my alley, so to speak. Like, yeah, man, God let you feel that, you know? Like, come on, that's like, this is everything about my life that is right. If this had a baseball reference in it, this would be everything, you know?
Right.
This would be the only song I need. It's got God and rock and roll and baseball, I'm good.
With Bobby Cox on backing vocals.
Yeah. So I just want to say that, like, this is not a song that we chose just because, you know, we got to Russ Ballard to interview him. But honest to goodness, I love, adore this song. It makes me feel things in my heart, you know? Okay. Let's talk about Let's talk about the opening to this song.
Let's do it.
Okay. We joked about it. It is very grandiose. Mm-hmm. And it's all over the place. Like, honestly, I get lost in the intro to the song.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read it to you and see if you can make any sense of what's going on here musically. I think the Argent version, which I'll play in a minute, is a little more easy to lead your ear through. Uh-huh. The way they voice certain things, or they have some light melody going on leading to some of these chords. But I get lost in these chords trying to just hear, what the crap key are we in right now? You know what I mean? Sure. It's all over the place. So starts out E, A minor, D, G minor, C sharp, F sharp minor, F sharp major, B minor. It's a pattern of jumping from one major chord to a minor chord a fourth above it is kind of the pattern, but it's jumping all over the place. So E, A minor.
Yep, that's
then we go down. Minor. D, G minor.
Okay, four minor.
That's a whole
that.
Step down. That's that pattern shifted a whole step down. Then down a half step, C sharp to F sharp minor.
Okay.
Then F sharp major,
so it makes it
to
major.
B minor. Okay. So it's the same move. It's just
minor
in different places.
Of F sharp.
That's right. Then we go E to A major.
Okay. So then that's one major,
one
four major,
major. Four major. Then, and I think that's where the drums kick in. And then it goes C sharp major, F sharp minor, one
okay.
four.
Same thing.
F sharp major, B minor again.
Same progression.
E, A major.
Okay. But
F sharp major, B major.
Okay. Is it 1/4 major?
Yes. G sharp, C sharp minor. That's a 1/4
minor. 1/4
minor. And then the F sharp, which is where they finally land. So the key in the chorus
is the song is in F sharp.
Oh, no,
it's in B. Okay.
Because the F sharp becomes the 5.
The 5
bom,
of B.
Bom, 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 yeah. And that's when you get, and maybe that's one of the things that makes the chorus feel so good. There's so much tension going on at the beginning of it because you're like, I don't know where the beginning of the phrase is.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue what key we're in.
Yeah.
So when you finally get that big bonk, pow, ba, 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 your ear just goes, yay! You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, finally! Let's listen to this all through one more time.
How left out does F major and B flat major feel in this song?
They're
come
like, on,
guys. Guys, come on.
We were right there.
We're next door. Show me some left. We're right there either place. Like, when you're coming from E or F sharp. That's
oh,
so
my gosh. All right, one more time. Here's that intro. A minor down to D, B minor, C sharp, F sharp minor, F sharp major, B minor, back to the E, A major, drums. There we are. Now we're in B. Now it feels like you have ground to stand on.
Yeah.
That's just crazy, dude.
Hey, that's nuts.
But that melody is...
What if you said, hey, this song's going to be in B. Our first chord's going to be in E. It's like, all right. No
yeah.
I can hear it. I got it.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we're throwing an A minor right after that. It's like, huh? Where are we going?
Okay.
And it's like, what?
Yeah, to try and make those chords make sense in relation to B, forget it. You're not going to do it.
Yeah, song's in B and our fourth chord is going to be a G minor. You good with that? It's like, what? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So anyway, it's wild. But then it gives you this beautiful, grand melody and that is equally beautiful played and sung. Uh-huh. And then you get the gang vocals coming in.
Dude,
I love it.
Idea that just hit me, which we may have done before we drop this. We got to get a bunch of people to just gang vocal this song and post it. We'll just get them all over. Just send this here and we'll just gang vocal it.
Gather in groups, mask up.
Throw it in. And we're just going to freaking just everybody sing it. And
yeah.
We'll do one of those large video things.
That's right.
It'd be awesome.
Now, so there's an alternate intro in the movie because the movie seamlessly goes from the ending scene with the Battle of the Bands with Bill and Ted and their band, which at this point consists of the princesses from the first movie, the good robots that they made to combat the bad robot versions of them.
Of themselves.
And then the alien scientist named Station who made the robots. And also the Grim Reaper who plays upright bass.
Yeah, it looks so cool.
So it's like all over the place. And and they're playing this intro, which is actually by Steve Vai. Mm-hmm. Steve Vai does all the air guitar stuff that they play throughout the second movie, and then he also performs this intro, which goes seamlessly from the ending scene into the chorus of the Kiss version as the credits roll. Let me let you hear that now. I'm going to pull this up.
Let's rock!
That's obviously Steve Vai. Yeah.
George Carlin looking on proudly.
Rufus.
Rufus. If you don't know that, Steve Vai right there. Now we've got kind of both playing over each other. One's going to fade out, the other fades in. And now we're fully in. Never mind hearing Steve Vai shred over this.
No.
And so that plays, you're seeing people all around the world tune into this battle of the bands. And then, yeah, so it's great. Love that so much. Let's talk a little bit about the Argent version. It was released in 1973. It went to number 18 in the UK. It did chart in the US, but not very high. It went to 114 on Billboard. But let me play you a little bit of the Argent version, because it has some chords that are slightly different and a decidedly 70s feel.
Yep.
Still amazing. It just has, and one thing that I really like about it, it has a lot of chords. How do I put this? It has a lot of chords over their own flat seven. Or chords, like, that's a weird way to say it. You'll hear it, but like, if you were in C, it's got a lot of like
C over B flat,
E flat over F kind of stuff, or like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So several of those, or like a flat six over flat seven. Those kind of moves are really cool. So let's check this out. But basically the same intro. But I feel like it leads, because they're adding some notes. Get that nice 70s organ in there.
Really prominent organ, I put that in.
Accents on tune four. Here's your first change. That's a flat six over flat seven chord. Instead of walking up, the Kiss version goes flat seven, flat six, flat seven, one. Real big. Here they're just going to go flat seven. You hear what I mean, though? It sounds
70s. Mix, 70s bass sounding.
Yeah. It's this far away from sounding like a jug band song. You know what I mean? Like, it's this far from Mungo Jerry. Like, the prog rock. This same chord. It's like, the chords are just a little different than the Kiss version. It's great, though. That's like a one major nine. And the lyrics in this first verse are very, very different. There's also a couple extra beats in there. Anyway, but I love both versions.
Well, that's the Argent version, for sure.
That is the Argent version.
And the Argent version, sure. You will notice the organ being prominent, because that is Rod Argent on keyboards and organ. So.
That's it. And a little more on Argent, actually. Their biggest hit was called Hold Your Head Up. And you probably know it. You may not know it by the title, but you probably know the song. Let's play a little bit of Hold Your Head Up. And we got to get, let's see. No, I need the single version. The original version is 6 minutes long, and it feels like a U2 song at the beginning. Right? You can definitely hear some U2 in here. I mean, come on. What? If you don't know this at this point, you'll know the chorus. Feels great. Let's skip ahead. Let's not. Let's just listen. Beautiful. That's, dude, yes. Come on. That's beautiful. Great. Argent. Okay.
Do you want to meet these bands?
Yes.
Okay, let's meet them. Let's play it at least once or twice. Here we go.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, so I've got both bands to be met.
Okay.
So I don't know where we want to start. Let's start with the Kiss band.
Okay.
And sure. Then we'll go to the Argent band.
All right.
So we're going to meet the band that played on the Kiss one that we started with.
Okay. Great.
Paul Stanley, vocals, rhythm guitar. Hitman rated him the 18th greatest of the 100 metal vocalists of all time.
Wow.
His right ear was misshapen, and he couldn't hear till he had surgery in 1982, so he couldn't even hear out of his right ear.
No kidding.
Yeah, Paul Stanley. Born Stanley Burt Eisen, changed his name to Paul after Paul McCartney and Paul Rogers.
Wow.
So those are two pretty good.
That's awesome.
He's the star child in Kiss. Correct. With the one star over the right eye. That is Paul Stanley. On vocals and bass, Gene Simmons worked odd jobs, including selling, trading comic books, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Probably the longest tongue in rock and roll music, I would say. He can speak German, English, Hungarian, Hebrew, and Japanese.
No kidding.
Yeah, how about that? He fell in love with Diana Ross while dating Cher. How about that?
He didn't date Diana Ross, did he? Did they date?
I don't think they dated.
Okay, he was just like,
he was like, I fell in love with her right in here. Lead guitar on this track, also bass, also in Grand Funk Railroad, Bruce Kulick.
Yeah.
His brother was in Meatloaf's touring band, and they both toured with Meatloaf following the release of the first album.
Okay.
So him and his brother both toured with Meatloaf. On drums and backing vocals, Eric Singer, he plays the role of the Catman, which was originally Peter Criss's character. Also played with Lita Ford, Black Sabbath, Brian May, Alice Cooper, among others. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as drummer one. Also on drums, we'll say Eric Carr. He plays drums on Car Jam 1981, backing vocals on God Gave Rock and Roll to You. Eric Carr, the drummer, was actually in the band Video, but was battling heart cancer, so actually couldn't play on the track.
Right.
So Eric Singer did. But they put him in the video with a big wig, and his hair had all fallen out, so they put him in a big wig. So really cool. I thought that they got him still in there. So both Erics. Not on this album or track, but if we're talking Kiss, I got to talk a little bit about Ace Frehley, because it would feel weird to not talk about Kiss without talking about Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
He's got an awesome custom Gibson Les Paul that emits smoke from the humbuckers and lights that match the tempo of the song, which I think is really neat. Not on this album and track at all, but also got to talk about Peter Criss, who's the original drummer, responsible for placing the ad in the East Coast edition of Rolling Stone that simply read, "Rock and roll drummer looking for original group doing soft and hard music." Peter Brooklyn, Paul, and Gene answered, and they added Ace, and the rest is history. He wrote the ballad Beth for Kiss. Yeah.
Arguably their biggest song.
Probably their biggest song.
Biggest hit, biggest anyway. Hit, it might not be their biggest song.
Charted.
Biggest hit.
So that is the Kiss band.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to play the jingle again, and let's we'll meet Argent. So the original was recorded by Argent, who we've talked about. Rod Argent on keyboards, backing vocals, and lead vocals. Bob Henrit on drums. Russ Ballard, who we're going to hang out with at the end, guitar, lead vocalist, wrote the song. Jim Rodford on bass and backing vocals. Bass is really prominent in the mix. John Verity on guitar and lead vocals, and also John Grimaldi on guitar. So lots of guitars in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is that version. I did not do a Meet the Band version on the Petra version. Even though
we already met Petra.
That is the version that I knew first, and the one that I liked and grew up on.
So of the three,
that's definitely the one I know the best.
Okay.
Definitely the one I know the most.
Is it your favorite?
Man, it's tough to say because it's heartstrings. It's what I know. Mm-hmm. It's familiarity. And I just recently have started listening to the Kiss version more, mainly a lot in preparation for this. Mm-hmm. But it probably, and they have actually two versions of it. They have one on their first album, and then they had one on Beat the System, which that's probably my favorite. I guess I just got to say. But I do love the guitar on the Kiss version.
Their version is my least favorite of the three.
Okay.
Because of, if nothing else, the rhythm that they sing on the chorus is different.
Mm-hmm.
You
want to play a little?
They don't syncopate it. Yeah, let's do this, and then I'll tell you what I don't like about it. A little more straight ahead.
God give rock and roll to you. Give rock and roll to you.
I like Greg Eckfold's vocals.
I don't like the rhythm.
A little choppy for you.
Yeah. Syncopate it, dude. Yeah. Come on. God give rock and roll to you.
He does some little, look out in there.
Yeah. I mean, his vocals are undeniable, but that's not my version.
Put it in the souls of everyone versus gave rock and roll to everyone.
Okay. Kids. Well, it says both in the other versions too. Put it in the soul of everyone and gave rock and roll to everyone.
It doesn't say God gave rock and roll to everyone.
They never say that in the Petra version.
They never do.
Funny. So a little more on the Kiss version and band here. The Kiss version is not only a reworking of the Argent track, but it's special in that it's a tribute to then Kiss drummer Eric Carr, who was at the time dealing with the heart cancer that ultimately killed him. Like it was the last Kiss song to feature Eric Carr. Now, he didn't play it on it, as you said, but he did provide some background vocals. He died 3 months after this was released as a single. So, like, it was the last, his last piece of music. And although he was too ill to play drums on the track, he is featured on backing vocals during the kind of break at the end. Let me play you, because this is actually one of my favorite parts of the song. And it was cool to read that it was actually Eric Carr. When they break it down after the guitar solo, it's got some alternate chords in there.
Okay.
So it's a straight ahead walk down, boom, God gave rock, 1-7, roll to you, 6, put it in the 5, roll to you, 4, right? Well, what they do here at the end involves a 4-sharp diminished chord.
God gave rock and roll to you, rock and roll to you,
that,
rock and roll.
That's Eric Carr doing the high back
part,
okay? Listen one more time.
God gave rock and roll to you.
6-5-4-sharp. 4. I love that.
That's good layered vocal there.
Great layered vocals. Beautiful. And then, of course, they go back to rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Pause. Wait for it. Flourish. There we go. All right. So, yeah, really nice touch there. Kind of a tender touch, you know what I mean, from Kiss, which is what subtlety is not really what Kiss is known for.
They're in your face.
Yeah.
So in your painted face.
A nice moment for that. The single was also the first to feature Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley sharing lead vocals since the song I from 1981's Music from the Elder. Well, that's pretty cool.
That is neat.
A little more on Kiss. Let's talk some Kiss. Here we go. I'm going to try and not recover ground that you already covered.
Okay.
By the way, I literally made the font of their band name bigger in my notes because that's what Kiss looks, is, right?
I like that.
They are larger than life,
yeah,
superhero figures who breathe fire and spit blood and set off explosions.
My uncle has seen them so many times in concert and says it's without a doubt the best show you'll ever see.
I can believe it.
He's been to tons of rock and roll shows. He is a huge Kiss fan,
yeah,
but he's like, there is no show that is better.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's everything.
I can believe it. If that's, you know what I mean? If just from a pure showmanship standpoint, I'm not sure anybody does it better than Kiss.
Yeah.
It's
a spectacle.
It is a spectacle. Yes, that is absolutely perfect. Kiss has sold more than 75 million albums worldwide, including 21 million selling albums and 30 gold albums,
Goodness gracious.
Any other U.S. band. Kiss has more gold albums than any other band in U.S. history.
I remember we did that for one of the bass player episodes where we talked about the wealthiest bass players, the top five, and I remember Gene Simmons was in the top five, and that makes sense with
that stat. They have 14 platinum or multi-platinum albums in the U.S. alone, but they have 21 albums that have sold a million copies or more worldwide.
That's crazy.
It's wild.
Everything they sell, people buy. Is like,
pretty much.
Like 21?
Yeah. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, class of 2014. A lot of people, they were actually the first band to have somebody protest on their behalf at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah?
Because they were eligible years earlier, and people were like,
what took you so long?
What? Yes, exactly. What is taking so long to get Kiss in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Yeah. Let's see. They, according to MTV, are the ninth greatest metal band of all time. That's according to MTV.
Oh, okay.
So you know I got that list.
I was about to say, you got the list?
Let's go to this list.
Rob loves list.
I love list. All right. This is the greatest heavy metal bands of all time, according to MTV's panel of experts.
Counting it down from 10?
Counting it down from 10. Number 10, Mötley Crüe. I said it with the umlauts in it.
You did. I'm going to guess number 9, Kiss.
Kiss. Ta-da. Good job. Number 8, actually a lot of umlauts in this list. Number 8 is Motorhead.
Yeah.
Number 7 is AC/DC. Okay. Number 6 is Slayer. Number 5, Pantera, newer group. Number 4, Iron Maiden. Number 3, Metallica. Number 2, Judas Priest. Number 1, you want to guess it?
From there, you said Metallica already.
Said Metallica.
That's where I would have put it. Poison? Are they going to be?
Gosh, no. Yeah. Heavy metal.
Crüe made the thing, so I was like, Motley Crüe did. Oh, man, Slayer.
I'll give you some honorable mentions while you think. Okay. Alice in Chains, mm-hmm. Anthrax, Faith No More, whose bass player appeared in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey as the head of the Faith No More Institute for...
Did you say Black Sabbath?
It's Black Sabbath.
Okay.
Yeah. What does that say? The Faith No More Institute for something in theology. It's like, I can't remember. Anyway. All right. So that is the MTV top 10 greatest heavy metal bands of all time. Kiss is also listed as by VH1 as the 10th greatest hard rock artist of all time.
So they're going metal and hard rock. They're
That's
both
right.
Categories.
So this is hard rock. So here's that list.
Okay.
Number 10 is Kiss. Number 11, by the way, just eking out of the top 10 is Aerosmith.
Okay.
Wow. Number 9, Guns N' Roses. Mm-hmm. Number 8, The Who. Number 7, The Mighty Van Halen. Number 6, Nirvana. Number 5, Metallica. Number 4, AC/DC. Number 3, Jimi Hendrix.
A band, the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience. And this is just artists, so greatest hard rock artists. Mm-hmm. Number 2, Black Sabbath. Number 1, think hard rock but not heavy metal.
Bon Jovi? John Bon Jovi?
No.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of comparison in that list.
Yeah. No, classic.
Classic. Led Zeppelin?
Led Zeppelin is the answer we were looking for. And they were the third greatest metal and hard rock live band of all time, as crowned by Loudwire magazine. That top five is Iggy Pop, AC/DC, Kiss, Queen, and Iron Maiden, number one, according to Loudwire.
Dude, Iron Maiden can play.
I couldn't get
into them because they're so evil looking on the cover.
Yeah.
I couldn't listen to them, so I couldn't bring them home. But one of my buddies, his name's Andy Wattenbarger, shout out to Waddy, is the biggest Iron Maiden fan I've ever met. He's like, he knows everything by them. He plays bass and he tries to, you know, and they're, that's tough.
People who are into Iron Maiden like live and breathe it.
It's like, it feels weird. He plays bass in a church, so he's pretty clean cut for the most part, and then you walk in his basement, and it's all their pictures. It's like, where have I stepped into, like a dungeon? It just looks evil. He's got bases hanging on the wall.
Are you going to murder
me? Warlocks and like freaking those posters. Yeah, but,
that's great. Yeah, dude, people who are real like Iron Maiden like heads are obsessed. Yep. It's like people who listen to our show. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Great Pates.
Yeah,
thank
people. That's right. If you're a Patreon of the show, we understand. If you walk into your basement, you just got pictures of me and JP just posted all over your walls.
If your ringtone is the Meet the Band jingle.
Yeah. let's see. All right. The original lineup of Kiss, as you said, it's not so. Kiss is funny because they are characters, right? Yeah. So they're it's not. In addition to being, you know, Paul Gene, Ace, and Peter.
He's the star child.
They were the star child, the demon, the spaceman, and the catman. And so they had these, like, characters. It's almost like you know, a show, a movie franchise where you have characters that could be played by different actors if somebody bows out.
Yeah.
So that eventually they brought back the spaceman character. They brought back the catman character, even though it wasn't Ace and it wasn't Peter. And so that's, you know, they continue to use those now. There are also periods with like Vinnie Vincent, where Vinnie Vincent was like an Egyptian warrior, and he had a little different face paint. And then Eric Carr was the fox. Mm-hmm. But then they unpainted, and then when they repainted, it was the original makeup again. They have some absolutely ludicrous merchandise. Kiss is the most widely merchandised band of all time. Yeah. I mean, there's no question. I don't think anybody even comes close to the amount of different kinds of merchandise. Gene Simmons will say yes to anything.
Yeah, that's right.
It's basically like, Gene, I have this idea for some Kiss merch. And he's like, will it pay me a dollar? Absolutely yes. Sign me up for it. Don't care. Right? These are the guys who donated their own blood to be poured into the comic books, the Kiss comic books by Marvel in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, anything to get the band out there, right, they will do. So I found a list of some of the most ridiculous official Kiss merch that Gene Simmons actually signed off on, okay? Number one, and this is on like a ranking site, you know what I mean, where people just vote things up and down. So it's not like in super order, it's just order of what people liked. Number one is Kiss Air Guitar Strings.
It's nothing.
It's a little amazing thing. It's got a label that says Kiss Air Guitar Strings, and then just a little package that has nothing in it
that
you can
so
see
much.
Through.
Oh, I love that so much.
Let's see. Kiss Super Spicy Chili Tomato Meat Buns.
Okay.
These are in Japan. And they're like scorched on the top. Anyway, number three is a Kiss casket. That's casket with a K. Okay. And it's literally just a tricked out, you know, it's got Kiss stuff all over it. And it's on this big chrome carrier. Kiss casket that cost about $3,000 when it came out in 2001. I wonder, you think there's people out there in the Kiss caskets?
Oh, definitely.
Let's see. Kiss themed Hello Kitty.
Last Will and Testament. They're like that.
That's right.
They're like life savings, whatever. Yep. That. I want that.
That's right. Kiss themed Hello Kitty toilet paper. let's see. This is maybe my favorite of this list so far. I haven't gone down the whole list, but Kiss condoms.
Okay.
There were different ones. There was tongue lubricated that had Gene's face on the front. Okay. There were studded Paul and love gun protection. Let's see.
I still like the air guitar strings. That's my favorite.
That's so good.
That's brilliant.
There's Kiss meets Archie comics, Kiss scratch and win lottery tickets, Kiss crunch cereal. Let's see. There's all sorts of beauty products, Snuggies, cornhole boards. They've had, I mean, pinball, lunch boxes, of course, all kinds of, you know, all kinds of just insane merchandise. As a matter of fact, they even had a pro wrestler. Do you know about this?
No.
Okay. I knew about this because I watched WCW, World Championship Wrestling, in the 90s, and they shut down in the early 2000s, got bought out by WWE. But in the late 90s, there was an officially licensed character in that promotion called the Demon, who wrestled in full Gene Simmons gimmick.
Okay.
Now, of course, it wasn't Gene Simmons. He was a trained pro wrestler. Okay. And originally, his first two appearances were by a guy named Brian Adams. Funny enough.
Brian Adams,
who you may know, if you're a wrestling fan, you may know as Crush. He was also, he had a couple other gimmicks, but a lot of people know him as Crush. But he never actually appeared in ring to wrestle as the character.
It was
the
guy just who, showmanship. Like, he just showed up and
for his when they announced the character, he played the character. But when he actually started to wrestle, this guy didn't want to do it. He's like, I'm not going to do this. Find somebody else. And so they got a guy whose name was Dale Torborg. Does that name ring any bells to you?
Mm-mm.
All right. His dad's name might, because his dad was MLB player and manager Jeff Torborg. You remember Jeff Torborg?
Vaguely.
He was a catcher. He caught Nolan Ryan's first no-hitter.
That's pretty cool.
Bill Singer's no-hitter and Sandy Koufax's perfect game.
He caught three big games.
Yes.
That's crazy.
He managed the Chicago White Sox and Mets when we were kids.
Okay.
And he was a broadcaster after that.
That's awesome.
His son Dale, a.k.a. the Demon, is now the strength and conditioning coach for the White Sox.
How about that?
Little MLB tie-in there.
That's great. Anytime we can tie in, we love baseball.
That's right. KISS started a three-year world retirement from touring tour.
Okay.
That is set to end in 2022.
Okay.
And obviously it got slowed down by, the pandemic and touring. But it's supposed to wrap up in 2022. Let's see. Okay. Gosh, I've got so much. Okay, no, I got a little more. I don't have a ton more. KISS was formed out of a band that Gene and Paul were in called Wicked Lester, who signed and recorded one album with Epic Records in the early 70s. You can actually listen to it on its streams now, okay. Epic Lester. It's not great.
Okay.
It sounds like a garage band recording and whatever. I don't recommend it. Let's see. Other notes. The KISS traditional logo, designed by Paul Stanley by hand. I say by hand. He designed it by hand, not with the aid of like a program
stencil
or anything. You know what I mean? He did it with a Sharpie and a ruler.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it, this is one of those things you can't really unsee so I hope you're ready for this, KISS fans. The KISS logo has two kind of lightning bolt shaped S's, you know what I mean? They're like crookedy like that, but they're actually not parallel with each other. So like one has a slightly different angle to it than the other. They meet up at the top and the bottom, but one the way they just sit, one is just a little crooked from the other. And so if that drives you crazy, I'm sorry, but I did warn you. Certain countries use a different logo for the band because the SS in the KISS logo has a similar look to the SS symbol that the Nazis used.
Oh, wow.
It's very similar. I mean, it's almost identical. And of course, Paul and Gene are both Jewish, and they both say there was never any intent, intentional there. But in Germany, Israel, several other countries in that region, where that would be a very sensitive logo.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with
they
that.
Use an alternate KISS logo that's a little more rounded for on the S's.
Yeah.
The K and the I are the same.
I was going to add, obviously they play Germany because Gene speaks German.
Yeah, sure.
So he's got some ties there.
Okay, how about, this is incredible. How about the KISS solo records? Their first round of solo records, they dropped four solo records all on the same day. And if you look at them, they're all KISS branded albums, but it's like KISS, and then it just has like Peter Criss's face on the front. You know what I mean? Like, and it's done very cool. They look very cool. They dropped them all on the same day, and coincidentally, the only top 40 single from any of the solo records was Ace Frehley's cover of a song called "New York Groove," written by Russ Ballard.
There we go.
Come on.
There we go.
Let's see. A little more from Wikipedia. This is going to – I don't know whether I believe this or not, okay? My heart doesn't believe this.
Okay.
But according to –
it's out there in the world, so let's read it.
Gene Simmons stated in his autobiography, which, by the way, is called KISS and Makeup.
Okay, that's great.
Come on.
That's brilliant.
That's brilliant.
That's brilliant.
KISS and Makeup. He said in his autobiography, KISS and Makeup, that Van Halen founder Eddie Van Halen was eager to replace Ace Frehley as KISS's lead guitarist.
Yeah, I heard somebody say that.
So
maybe I read it
here's a little context. Gene Simmons, and of course, Gene was foundational early in Van Halen's career. Mm-hmm. He financed and produced their first demo tape, and you can find those demos. Just search for Van Halen Gene Simmons demos. You can get them now and hear them. That's got some of their early material. Yeah. So obviously, that part is 100% true.
That lands.
That ties there. But Gene and Eddie's brother Alex convinced Eddie to remain with Van Halen. Allegedly, okay? Eddie was willing to break up Van Halen due to tensions at the time between himself and lead vocalist David Lee Roth, who ultimately left the band in 85. So,
if that happens, we don't get the Sammy Hagar years,
oh my
which
gosh.
Makes me sad.
And we're huge Kiss fans.
We're big Kiss
right?
fans.
Right? I mean, yeah. massive Kiss yeah. fans. Other notable guitarists who auditioned to replace
Instead
Fraley.
Of playing a Wolfgang, I'm playing a freaking guitar yeah. with lights and
yeah.
smoke coming out the
pointy
know,
edges
right?
and yeah, all kinds of things. But apparently, other notable guitarists who auditioned to replace Ace Frehley included Punky Meadows of Angel, Doug Aldrich of Whitesnake and Dio, Richie Sambora of Bon Jovi, and I tell you who this could have been a perfect fit for Kiss. Yngwie
yeah,
Malmsteen.
Dude, man, he's kicking picks all over the place.
I mean, he would have fit right in.
He would, man.
Now, musically, he
no.
would have been too much.
They would have hated him.
Too much for anybody.
That's right. They'd have been like, calm down. Like,
yeah.
quit spinning.
Yeah. He's like, they're like, dude, stop playing this song. This is Beth. They're like, you know what I mean? Stop
yeah.
playing.
Yeah.
You're not even on this song. And he's like, feedback and all this.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Anyway, but he would have fit character-wise. He definitely would have fit.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Okay, a nice Kiss moment in the movie This Is Spinal Tap. There are several things in that movie that make me think Kiss.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that they are based on Kiss. You know, I know there is definitely a Kiss story of Kiss getting either lost or trapped under the stage.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that actually happened. After Spinal Tap came out.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I know, right? But there is
rock
a moment.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
There's a moment, though, where the band is having, quote, a bit of the drabs, and lead singer David St. Hubbin's girlfriend has designed some face makeup for them that obviously has to be a rib on Kiss.
Yeah.
And the makeup is very Kiss fashion, and they're, like, sitting at a diner, and she's handing out these sketches, you know what I mean? And they're based on, like, zodiac signs. So their keyboard player, Viv Savage, has, like, a yin-yang Libra thing. Nigel is a goat as a Capricorn. Derek Smalls is a crab, and David gets a lion face. This line isn't funny, but the way they say it is so funny because he just hands him this, and he goes, here's your crab face. And it's, I don't know, it's too funny. All right, let's see.
I gotta stump the genius.
Oh gosh, haven't stumped the genius. Let's do it.
Stump the genius.
Stump the Gene Simmons genius.
Stump the genius. Stump the genius. Stump the genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, we're gonna play Stump the Genius Bill and Ted edition.
Oh, let's go.
Oh, Rob's gonna
I'm going to ace Frehley this.
Oh, I love it. Here we go. According to Ted, who is Noah's wife?
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc. Nailing it. One for one. In Clue, who against the Reaper, okay, when they're playing.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait.
When they're
okay.
playing against the
yeah.
Reaper, who was the killer?
Okay. Death says it's Colonel Mustard.
Right.
But it's actually Professor Plum.
That's correct.
Blammo!
Sorry, Death, you lose. It was Professor Plum. He thought it was Colonel Mustard in the cellar with a candlestick. What was the name of the teacher that assigned the project of the historical figures? Do you want multiple choice?
No. No, okay. No. Hold on. Mr. Ryan.
Mr. Ryan!
Boom!
Bam! What was the name of the sporting goods store that Genghis Khan tears apart?
It is... hold on. It's Osmond's.
It's Oshman's.
Oshman's? Oh,
yes,
wow.
That's
okay.
Good. That's great. Man, that was a toughie. All right. Number five and final. Rob has killed this. What was Bill's new mom's name?
Bill's new mom. So backstory. her name is Missy.
Her name is Missy.
All right.
Thanks, so, Missy. I mean, mom.
Missy is one of the great running jokes throughout the series.
Yes.
So in the first movie, she's just like, she's 3 years older than them. Yeah. She's barely older than them. Yeah. And in the first movie, Bill's parents had gotten divorced and Bill's dad married Missy. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and of course she's in their room and whatever, and they're like gaga over her, you know what I mean? And Ted's like, your stepmom's cute, dude. You know, he's like, shut up, Ted. He's like, you remember when she was a senior and we were freshmen? Shut up, Ted. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a whole thing. And then in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, we find that Missy has divorced Bill's dad and married Ted's dad. And so they go through the reverse of the whole thing. And then, spoiler alert, I don't want to spoil anything major, but in Bill and Ted Face the Music, the third movie, the opening scene is at a wedding, and it's the wedding of Missy and Deacon, Ted's little brother.
Dude, that's
Missy
funny.
Is marrying Deacon.
That's funny.
And
that's
it's
great.
Disgusting, actually. But
great job. Holy cow, Rob.
Come
Clean
on.
House, five for five.
I knew I had that one.
Stumped that genius.
I felt
no
good about that.
More. That was
Bill
wonderful.
And Ted, especially Excellent Adventure, but obviously Bogus Journey by association, is one of the foundational movies for who I am.
That's great.
Bill and Ted and Wayne's World are on equal footing for me as far as like how much of my humor and just the way they love, the way those movies revere music has always been important to me. You know
That's
what
good.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So I knew I had that. Let's see. Okay. One last note on this. Every now and then, when you listen to a song enough, you'll find some sort of edit in there that you never caught before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can hear things like
a
where...
punch? Or...
yeah, a punch in. So they'll do these things, for those unfamiliar with the term, where you're, instead of playing a whole track again, you know, I messed up. Oh, I got to play the whole thing again. They'll say, well, let me punch you in. And so they'll say, all right, I'll start you in the, you know, at the beginning of the chorus, and you'll play a line, and then they punch you out, and it just drops in this one little thing. It's extremely easy to do in the digital era. It was not exactly as easy to do
on the Roland V Studio.
That's right. Yes, or in the analog.
Even before
area,
that, on cassette,
on tapes,
Fostex.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So you had to time it just right, and obviously, it's easiest to do when there's a space. Mm-hmm. If you got a space before this lead line, then you can just drop in that one lead line, no harm, no foul. But if you've got a thing that you're like, man, I really want to be able to keep this one part, but punch in the middle of a phrase, either on an instrument
and
or
when
a vocal.
It's busy, it's tougher.
Yeah. And so, but you're like, man, you really nailed that thing, but let's try and punch in that second part. So I found a punch, okay? And it's actually one of my favorite parts of the song. There's an end part of this thing where Paul Stanley starts sort of like sermonizing almost. He's like giving the pep talk at the end. He's like, come on, people. You know what I mean? It's like
rock and roll.
Yes, that's where it is. Okay. That's maybe one of my favorite Paul Stanley moments.
Okay.
All right. So let me give you the end of this here.
I know life sometimes can get tough.
Come on.
And I know life sometimes can be a drag. But people, we have been given a gift. We have been given a road. And that road's name is rock and roll.
All right. First of all, I was like, oh, I wasn't sure. I didn't know Paul could do that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Paul had that in him, really. Uh-huh. So I love that line. But this is another one of those things you're not going to be able to unhear this once I play this again and point out, okay? So once he hits the first piece of vibrato, rock and roll, there's a little cut right there. If you're listening, you'll catch it, okay? You'll hear the voice change, and it's not a natural vibrato cut. This, my friends, is a punch-in. You hear it? There's a little flutter.
I didn't hear it.
Just a little flutter before that first
name is rock and roll.
It's that very first flutter you hear.
No way I would have caught that.
I will go to my grave believing that is a punch in.
I don't know.
It's too unnatural to be as smooth as the rest of that vibrato is. I think what they're like, dude, you nailed that one, but maybe he sang it flat, or they're like, dude, what if you did a little flourish at the end and took it down? Because it's crushed. Whatever it is, it's crushed. And I'm glad they you know, put it together. Yeah, tied those both in together. Okay, man, this has been
and we get to interview the artist that wrote it next.
Let's go.
Goodness gracious, we're just getting ramped up.
That's right. It's like an excellent adventure, you know?
It is.
Robin JP's epic podcast adventure.
There we go.
Okay, we're going to go talk to Russ Ballard, and we'll be back at the end to tuck you in. But in the meantime, stop what you're doing right now. I see you, doctor. I know you're scrubbed up. You're mid-surgery, but you got to stop, okay? I know you're playing us in the OR, and it's an important thing. That, you know what? The guy's, he'll be fine. I know you've got his ribs opened up.
My mom's a retired nurse. It's okay. Yeah. Trust us.
He'll be okay, okay? Gail told us he'll be fine. All right? Just leave it and go to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter right now and follow us at Great Song Pod. You'll be glad you did, I promise. Be part of the Facebook group. It is called Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly.
You can take your gloves off. I mean,
that's right. Yeah. Okay. And then, or you can just go to facebook.com/groups/Great Song Pod and find us directly there. If you just really love what you're hearing and you want to help us make more of it, if you want to be a part of producing the show, you can become a Patreon producer at patreon.com/greatsongpod. That's patreon.com/greatsongpod. And when you do that, when you just decide to, you know, support the show once a month, instead of buying a Frappuccino, we can say thank you by giving you bonus shows, stuff you can't get anywhere else, early releases, behind-the-scenes goodies, and more as our way of saying thank you so much for supporting the show. So do all that stuff right now. Then you can scrub back in, get back to your surgery. See, that didn't take long at all. He's fine. Jeez. We're going to talk to Russ Ballard. We'll see you again in a second.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Russ Ballard, the writer of God Gave Rock and Roll to You and many other great
Lots
tracks.
Of others.
So much other stuff. Argent, all the things. We're so excited to have you. Thank you so much, Russ, for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Well, thanks for inviting me, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely. We're so excited to talk to you about not only God Gave Rock and Roll to You, but so much of your other career stuff. But I do want to start with God Gave Rock and Roll to You, since that's what our episode is focused on. Can you kind of tell us how the track came to be, the inspiration, and sort of the writing of it?
Yeah, well, I wrote the song in 1973, which is a long time ago, but it was a strange one. It happened when after I had a bit of, it's a strange thing. We'd been working really hard. I was with Argent at the time and touring the States and stuff, but not really having any time off. You know, any moments I had off, I was writing. So I was always working. But it's not work, is it really? But, you know, you can overdo things, you know. So, I mean, sometimes I would play, the car would turn up and pick me up to take the band to a show we'd be playing in Manchester here, which is like 3 hours away. And you finish at midnight, get back 3 a.m. I'd be up at 7 writing until 2 the next day when the car would pick me up and take me to Bournemouth or take me to Dover or take me to Birmingham. And I did this for 2 years, you know, just solidly 2 years, 7 days a week.
Wow.
The gigs weren't always 7 days a week, but if I had a day off, I would be writing all day, you know. So I would sort of get home at 3 a.m, 4 a.m, or whenever, and I'd be up at 7, and I'd be writing till the, you know, right the way through. So I had a bit of one of those low times, you know, when you sort of, they call it emotional. I was emotionally exhausted, you know. And so it was a bit of a rough time, you know. And then I kept writing through it, you know. Very close friend of mine is Nick Kinsey, a guy who's no longer with us, but he just married he was about 28 27. He married a girl who was a year older than them. They met at university and they married and stuff, and he said to me one day, you know, Carol's very ill, you know, she's got cancer, or it was one of those sort of things. I said, you're kidding, what's, you know, 28 years of age, you know. He said, yeah. He said, but she's okay at the moment. And so I went on holiday at the time. I remember coming back and feeling bad on holiday, actually. And I'm sort of thinking about Nick and these problems with his wife and stuff. When I got back, I thought, I must phone Nick. I said, see how she is. I must phone Nick. Got to phone Nick to see how she is. And I got back from holiday in Spain, from Spain. And I phoned his studio where I used to do my demos in Barnet. And I, there's an American guy called Richie Gold, used to be the tape operator there, you know. And he said, I said to him, can I speak, Richie Gold, his name was. I said, can I speak to Nick? He said, oh, Nick's not here. Haven't you heard? You know, he's at the funeral.
Oh, no.
It was the weirdest thing. It was the weirdest thing. So I said, you know, I said, well, get him to phone me when he comes back. I've got to speak to him, you know. And I said, anything I can do, Nick? He was very depressed. He said, oh, come and have a drink, Russ. Come and have a drink tonight at the pub. So I went to the pub, and he was just staring into space. I just crashed, and I wrote a song called "I Don't Believe in Miracles," which was a hit here actually for Colin Blunstone, who was the singer in the Zombies. But it was a hit, and he still uses it in his show tonight. But it was one of those things that came from the heart, you know.
Yeah.
I don't believe in miracles, but I thought you might show your face or have the grace to tell me where you are. And I believe I was your game, your ball. If you threw me up, then I would fall. And so you've won again. You win them all. I believe I'd run to you if you should call. But I don't believe in miracles. I don't believe in miracles. But I thought you might show your face, have the grace to tell me where you are.
Wow.
But I believe that somewhere there's someone who's going to light the way when things go wrong. The bullet that shot me down was from your gun. The words that turned me round were from your song. But it's one of those. And people were saying to me, when I was in the studio, they were saying to me, you can't call it "I Don't Believe in Miracles." I said, yeah, no, I can. But I said, it can't believe I do believe in miracles, because it's from the heart, you know, this right. is how I feel. And every verse I tried to make the verse is kind of positive, or the last verse I tried to make positive. I don't believe in miracles. I don't believe in miracles, but I believe that somewhere there's someone who's going to light the way when things go wrong. You know, mm-hmm. The bullet that shot me down was from your gun. The words that turned me around were from. It's kind of, for me, it's spiritual. It's very much a spiritual kind of song. And so I wrote that, and I had this depression. It went on for about 9 months altogether. You know, it's really, really. I worked all the way through it. I was with Arjun. Mm-hmm. Tour in America, seven week tour with starting a depression, you know.
Yeah.
I felt best when I was on the stage. You know, when I was on the stage, I was fine. It's coming off the stage. You had this these feelings and stuff. It was very, very strange. And, you know, after that 9 months, I started to come out of it, and it was just wonderful. It was like being reborn. And, you know, when you hear people say, God has touched me, or whatever they say, that kind of thing. God has touched my heart, or they say, or I've been reborn, or, you know, I'm reincarnated, or whatever, you know. But it was a definite thing. I felt so amazing. It was like being a kid again, you know, after having this depression. And I sat at the piano, and I just wanted to put down how I felt, and I wrote, God gave rock and roll to you. But I wrote... The first verse I wrote, Kiss changed my first verse.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked in America anyway, but it was Love Your Friend. Love your friend and love your neighbor. Love your life and love your neighbor. No, it's never too late to change your mind. Don't step on snails. Don't climb in trees. Love Cliff Richard, but please don't tease. It's one of those. But God gave rock and roll to you. Gave rock and roll. But all the other words that they use and I use it, that's all my stuff. In fact, Kiss changed the first verse and made that verse better because it suited America. Mine didn't suit America at all, but it's how I felt.
Yeah.
But the thing about if you want to be a singer or play guitar, man, you got to sweat or you don't get far, because it's never too late to work 9 to 5. And if you're young, then you'll never be old. Music can make your dreams unfold. How good it feels to be alive. So, you know, it's just my mother was quite, I mean, my mother could quote anything. I'm not particularly religious, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Although, you know, I feel pretty spiritual. But my mother, was very, she could quote anything from the Bible, you know. She always, she had a phrase for every occasion, you know, and she used to say to me things like, you know, well, God gave, when I was a kid, you know, God gave you that, and God gave you that, you know, and God gave you that. And I think it sank into my psyche.
Wow.
But that's how I came to write the song initially. And we recorded it as Arch, and we had a hit with it here after Hold Your Head Up. It was a hit. And then it was 1985. I was in the States, actually. I was waiting to go into a record label. If I can tell you how Kiss came to record it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we were going to ask anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to a few record labels. I forget why I was there, actually. But this guy walked past me. I was waiting to go in to see an A&R man. And this guy walked past me. He was familiar, curly hair and sort of drain pipe jeans and baseball boots. And he looked at me and said, "Russ Ballard." I went, "Yeah." And he was English. And he said, "It was Nigel Harrison from Blondie."
Oh.
And he was working there. He said, you know, he said, "At the moment we're collating songs for a movie." He said, "Did you see Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures?" Which I didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "But we're doing a follow-up, which is going to be called, I think it's Bogus Journey."
Yeah.
And he said, "I've told them, and they're very keen, that your song, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, would be great for the movie. It'd be perfect." So I said, "Well, yeah, if you want to use it, it's fine by me, you know." And so they were trying, they apparently asked a few different bands and tried it. But when Kiss came along, they said, "Oh, we'll do it. We want to change the first verse because, you know, that wouldn't suit America, you know." So, yeah. And that's what happened.
Wow, that's great! Oh, I love that.
Yeah, you've written a lot of stuff for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that is.
Yeah, all sorts of things, really. Yeah.
Three Dog Night, Liar, Hot Chocolate. I mean, Head East and Rainbow did Since You've Been Gone.
And Brian May. Yeah, Brian May did it too.
Yeah.
It's quite a resume, or it's quite a CV that you have. You know. Let's see. I got to ask this because you are, of course, Russ Ballard, but you also happen to be Russell Glenn Ballard. How often do you have to explain to people that there is another Glenn Ballard who is American, who is also in the music industry, who is also very important?
Yeah.
Is there ever any confusion between you and Glenn Ballard?
I had John. I'm trying to think of his second name. He was here, American guy, and now heads a record, quite a big record company or publishing company. And he was a writer, John. He wrote an Earth, Wind & Fire song with a couple of other guys. But he also wrote Saving the Best for Last. Do you remember that tune?
I think so.
Or Save the Best for Last.
Vanessa Williams?
For Vanessa Williams.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he... There were three guys on that too, and he turned up at my house, and we were riding together when just before the Vanessa Williams song came out, funnily enough, and he told me he'd written this song, and he played it to me. I said, "It's a beautiful tune," and he was chatting to me, and suddenly he said, "Yeah, no, but that's Russ Ballard. That's Russ Ballard. You're talking about Russ Ballard." I said, "I'm Russ Ballard." I mean, Glenn Ballard, sorry. I mean, that's what he said to me. It's crazy.
That's funny.
So that's the only one. Yeah. I'm aware. I mean, he did the Wilson Phillips things. He did that Man in the Mirror.
He's done a lot.
He did one of my favorite albums, actually. And
which
that
is?
Was Jagged Little Pill.
Yes.
Oh, yep, Alanis. Sure there did. We go. Yep. Good stuff. Album. What's it like to play in Abbey Road Studios? I saw that you played in Abbey Road.
I've been going there since I was 15.
That's awesome. Dude, that's great.
I did my first session there when I did my first session at 15, well before the Beatles.
Wow.
Before they came out, yeah. Number two, with Norrie Paramore, because somebody had told Norrie Paramore, who before George Martin, he was the biggest producer from Abbey Road, you know, from EMI. They had John Burgess, they had George Martin, they had Norrie Paramore, they had Wally Ridley and all these different staff producers, you know. And so I was going in there. So we were going in there all the time. We'd make, same as the Beatles, the Hollies, Freddie and the Dreamers, all those signed to EMI. we used to make, I was in the roulettes, you see, with Adam Faith. Mm-hmm. And we used to do two songs in 3 hours. So wow. The Beatles did the same. All the Beatles sessions they used to do, and you could work from 10 till 1, and then the next session would be from 2 till 5, and then it'll go right from 7 till 10, and that would be finished every day. It was like that. Wow. But you do two songs in 3 hours, and you had a 20-minute tea break in between. You go a cup of tea. You know, you do the A side. And then John Burgess used to produce us. And John would say, "Should we have a cup of tea?" You know, we'd say, "Yeah." But we didn't really want tea. We just wanted to play. But we'd go downstairs. But, you know, this is how records were made. They used to sell like 50,000 a day in those days. You know, it's just amazing. But now you make 4 minutes of music, it takes 5 or 6 days. You know?
That's really true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's talk about Argent for a moment. I want to, because a lot of our American audience may not be familiar. We have a lot of UK listeners as well, but a lot of our American audience may not be as familiar. If you had to point to one Argent album or one track even to get a new listener started with Argent, where would you point them?
I mean, we did Liar on the first album. That was a night I really liked. I thought that was quite a good version. Well, it was a good demo for Three Dog Night anyway. My favourite album was In Deep.
In Deep
I thought was really good. I had God Gave Rock and Roll to You on it as well, but it had, we were together then. We'd done about 5 or 6 tours of America. And we were really tight then, you know. And that would be my choice.
Okay, there you go. Straight from Russ Ballard. Go listen to In Deep by Argent and get your Argent collection started.
Talk a little bit about the holy guitar that you have, the holy guitar.
Yeah, I picked it up today. It's in my studio. I took it in the studio. It's in there now. I would have gone and showed it to you, actually, but it's in the studio. That was a 1965 Stratocaster, black Stratocaster. And my friend had bought this thing, you know, and he was playing it. And I said to him, he said, "I want to sell this." He wasn't really a guitar player. He was a rhythm guitar player, but he was in Unit 4 Plus 2. Do you remember that band?
Oh, I know it from I know it from research. I'm not familiar with the band. But
a song called Concrete and Clay. It was a great tune. Played on that as well, funnily enough. And I said, "I'll buy it from you. How much do you want for it?" It was £200 or something. So I said, "Yeah, I'll have it off you." And at the time, I don't know if you remember, but it was very fashionable. You used to see chairs like in venues, in halls, and they had round holes in them, and you know, because it made them lighter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were metal, and they were in holy. And I said, "God, I'd like a guitar like that, you know, just holes, you know, make the guitar really light too, you know."
Yeah.
And so I tried to change it around. My friend cut it around for me. He was at college at the Royal Academy of Art. And I said, he was my oldest friend, still around. I said, "Jim, can you cut some holes in it and, you know, do it?" And then I had new pots in there, new knobs, mm-hmm. you know, pots and things. Then I put a Gibson humbucker in on there, and add a hole in the stock at the top. but I threw it up on stage one day, and it crashed on the floor. And the neck split, so we had a new neck. But it's a Telecaster neck on there now, so it looks even stranger. But that's how that happened.
So and you
it looked metal.
Yeah, you've kind of invented the Frankenstrat before Eddie Van Halen almost. He's, you know, famous for his...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
that was 1969 when I did mine.
Wow. That's really fascinating. I love that.
I loved your 84 solo album, Voices, and your 2020 project, It's Good to Be Here. Vocally, I really like My Awakening, and it was nice to see the revisit of New York Groove, which probably most know from Ace Frehley, but so good. So I will tell everybody to check out that, and check out the Voices of Russ Ballard podcast. So that's good.
Have you listened to that? JP?
Yeah, I did. I checked out the 2020 project. I really like My Awakening vocally. I think it's good, and I really liked the revisit of New York Groove. I thought that was good. There's one question that we ask everybody. So you're on tour either in America, in the States, or in your part of the world, and you go into a gas station over here. What would be your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're trying to think of it, I'll tell you mine. I would get a candy bar over here we have called Three Musketeers Bar because it's the most ounces. They're all about the same price, but my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want. So I'd get a Three Musketeers candy bar. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
It'd have to be vegan because I'm vegan.
Okay.
All right.
So it'd be probably pretty difficult. I'd probably have something like what do you call crisps in the States?
Oh, chips. Yeah,
yeah, chips. That's good.
Potato chips.
Chips. Yeah. A bag of chips. It'd probably be plain without anything in them, you know, something like that. That's probably, I wouldn't have a candy bar.
Yeah.
Because it probably have meal. I don't use meal. I've been vegetarian for 40, over 40 years.
Wow.
I've been vegan for 20.
Wow. So you were vegetarian and vegan before it was cool.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, years and years ago, I was vegan. Actually, I was vegetarian first of all in '68 when Argent started. I was vegetarian then, and I think that you know that's why I lost a lot of weight as well. It's probably in the first place. It's probably why I crashed and didn't have a very good diet. You know, being on the road and not really eating that much and not sleeping as well. So yeah, but life is good, isn't it?
It is.
It's a great process, even in the pandemic. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah,
especially doing this, you know, especially doing music every day. Yeah. I love it.
Hard to complain.
Well, Russ, you're a rock star. You're a legend, done all kinds of stuff. So we have enjoyed getting to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time. Hope you had a good time.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and it's nice to have that Southern hospitality.
Well, you're always welcome. If you ever come to Tennessee, look us up. We'll go grab some food and hang out with you.
Yeah, brilliant. JP and you, Rob. Thanks a lot.
All the best.
Talk to you soon.
Take care of yourself.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Russ Ballard, who wrote this beautiful song that has blessed the world, brought about world peace, and all the things that Bill and Ted hoped it would do.
That's right.
And we have covered it for you here in long form. God gave rock and roll to you. Take version one, take version two, whatever.
Take Petra, whatever you like.
Yeah, whichever version you prefer. Movie month continues. We'll be back next week with a classic for the 80s kids among us. And you guys are going to love it as movie month continues. Another great song coming next week. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.